Reading comes from Mark chapter 5, verses 1 to 20. They went across the lake to the region of Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the slope and into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed.
Thanks, Gus. That was awesome. Hey, everyone. All right. It's cool to be here tonight. I'm a bit excited. This should be good. This is an awesome passage. It's also a bit of a weird passage, right? There's like some weird, difficult, complex stuff in this passage. It talks about impure spirits being cast out of a man. Like, that's just weird for us sitting here in like the modern West. We just don't deal with impure spirits every day. That's not part of our day-to-day life. And so this can be somewhat difficult and maybe distracting for us when we read a story like this. And that's actually okay. It's okay that we read the Bible and there's some weird stuff in there because we're not God, so that's okay. Tonight, I'm actually not going to be focusing on the demon possession side of this story. I think that there's some really, there's some other awesome stuff that we can also learn from this passage, and so that's what I want to be focusing on. I think there's some cool things that we can learn about Jesus and that we can also learn about ourselves. So how about we do that? But before we get into this passage, I just want you to think about a time when maybe something happened in your life and it just meant that your life was never the same again. Like you saw something, you experienced something, you heard something, and it just changed everything. A few years ago, I was traveling in America on a bus tour. And as we were heading to a big city, we stopped off at a little food court along the way for lunch. And it's one of those regular food courts with the shops around the outside and you got like the tables in the middle. So me and a few of my friends, we went and got some food, sat down and started eating. The table we sat down at was right next to these local American women. Two women were having lunch with their kids. And you know American people, they talk loud. I know that's saying something for me. And they have those really strong accents. So sometimes when they talk, it's really hard not to overhear what they're saying. And so I did. I heard a little bit of their conversation. And one of the women, she was putting hand sanitizer on one of her kids' hands before they ate. And she's turned to her friend sitting across the table from her, and she said in that strong accent, "When I found out that the 3-second rule was not real, it changed my life." This woman, she had an experience and it changed her life. Like, it changed the way that she thought about food being dropped on the ground. She'd no longer eat the food when it was dropped on the ground. It changed the way she taught her kids about germs and about food being dropped on the ground. It changed the way she talked to her friends about the 3-second rule. The man in our story tonight also had an experience that changed his life. Okay, it's possibly slightly more profound than learning the truth about the 3-second rule, but it does all the same things. Changes the way he thinks, changes his behaviors and his actions, and it changes what he talks about. And so tonight I want to ask the question, how does an encounter with Jesus change our life? How does it change the way we think about God? How does it change our actions and our behaviors? How does it change how we talk to people about God, to our friends, to our families, to our neighbors? So grab your Bibles, grab your phones, whatever you got, and have Mark 5 open in front of you. A little bit of context for us. So Jesus has left this mostly Jewish region where he's been living and teaching, and he and his disciples jump into a boat and they head across the lake to a mostly Gentile, so non-Jewish area. And he and his disciples, they meet this man in the midst of his brokenness and his despair. And the man's life is never the same. Jesus meets this man where he is. Jesus encounters this man who is held captive, isolated from his community, his family. He's not able to live or work where he wants. And Jesus sets him free. Come and have a read with me, starting in verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. This is the mostly non-Jewish town. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. This story gives us quite a lot of details about this man's life. That's a really miserable picture. We're told that he lives in the tombs, which is essentially a cemetery. So it's cold, it's dark, and you're literally surrounded by dead people. We get told that, you know, he's being kicked out of the town by the townspeople according to the local customs if you're possessed by impure spirits. The townspeople had tried to tie him up and bind him with chains and ropes, but he was so strong that he broke them. All day and all night, he cried and screamed at the top of his lungs, and it would echo down into the town for everyone to hear. He would sit in the hills and cut himself with stones. It's a really sad picture. This man is completely held captive by these impure spirits. His life is completely controlled by them. But then something happens. In verse 6, it says, when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He meets Jesus. Jesus has just arrived on the shores of his town. He's still getting out of the boat when this man comes running, sprinting down the hill to meet him. Jesus has a short conversation with him, and we learn that this guy isn't just possessed by one impure spirit, but by many. The spirits, they recognize Jesus' power and authority, and they actually beg Jesus to send them into the nearby pigs. Even though they're numerous in number, the impure spirits recognize that Jesus has far more authority and far more power, and so they're reduced to begging. Jesus, somewhat surprisingly, allows the impure spirits to go into the pigs. Verse 13 says, he gave them permission, and the impure spirits came and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Now, this is the weird bit for us, right? Like, this, we just don't come across demon possession, impure spirits, like, ever. And it's a complex issue, and so you probably have questions. And I don't want to diminish the significance of evil spirits in the world because we know that they're real. We know there's lots of other passages in the Bible that do talk about them. But like I said before, it's not our focus for tonight. So however you think of impure spirits, what is really clear from this passage is that this man's life has been absolutely and completely overtaken by these impure spirits. And these spirits are causing destruction. We see in this story the destructiveness of impure spirits. What is possibly an explanation for why Jesus allowed the spirits to go into the pigs is that through that we see their real intentions of total and utter destruction. It was slightly less obvious in the man's life, but it's become super obvious when the impure spirits go into the pigs and they run down the cliff and drown. But we can see that there was real destruction going on in the man's life. I mean, he's already living in the cemetery. That's pretty much as close to death and destruction as you can get. The impure spirits had brought destruction to his relationships, to his physical body, to his work, and to where he was able to live. But his encounter with Jesus changes everything. Jesus casts the spirits out of him and completely sets him free, liberating him from the destructiveness of the spirits, these spirits which had held him captive. He has an experience with Jesus and he's never the same again. Now, all the townspeople hear that something's going on, and like anything, word travels fast, and they come out to the hillside to see what's going on. But what do they find when they come to see this scary, naked guy that has been living in the cemetery for a while? Verse 15 says that when they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. They see a man who's no longer trapped or imprisoned or held captive by these spirits. They see a man who no longer needs chains or ropes to control him. He's no longer in chronic pain, which causes him to cry out and hurt himself. He's now dressed and in his right mind. He's had an encounter with Jesus and it's changed his life. While none of us are possessed by a legion of demons, we're not hanging out naked in a cemetery, I hope not, there is still something in this story that we can connect to. There's something that we see in our own lives. Like the man in our story, we too can find ourselves trapped or imprisoned by our thoughts, our actions, our behaviour. We can find ourselves chained to things which ultimately bring destruction. However we think of impure spirits, when we look at the sin and the brokenness and the evil of the world and in our lives, we can see how these things bring total and utter destruction. We find ourselves imprisoned to our addictions, to drugs, alcohol, or pornography. We're enslaved or trapped in our bitterness and anger when we refuse to forgive. We're held captive by our selfishness, our jealousy, our greed. And each of these things bring destruction to different aspects of our lives. Think about high school. I know that might be easier for some of the people on this side of the room, but think of some average high school person that wants to become a popular kid. It's basically the plot to every high school movie ever. But think about what happens along the way. They become so fixated on becoming popular that they actually become enslaved to it. This brings about destruction to their relationships. They stop hanging out with their old friends and they actually mock them, and that breaks that relationship. They start going to parties and they're drinking and they're doing things that they wouldn't normally be doing. They stop eating and try and be skinny, whatever that means. And this brings destruction to their physical body. They're mean to uncool kids or kids that don't fit into the popular group. And over time, it starts to weigh down on them and it affects their mental health. And what is it that this person needs? They need to get out from under what is holding them captive. They need to be set free. Jesus sets us free. Jesus has the power and the authority over all things in our life which bring destruction. This story, it clearly demonstrates Jesus has complete power over the demonic forces, over sin and evil. And it shows his desire to bring about justice and healing and reconciliation, even to the Gentile people, but to all people. Jesus comes to us and meets us in the midst of our destructive ways, and he has mercy on us. In his death on the cross, perfect Jesus took on himself the punishment for all the bad, destructive, and sinful things we do. Jesus endures the total and utter destruction which lay at the end of our path in order to set us free. Jesus comes to the man in the story in the midst of his brokenness, his isolation, his despair, and he rescues him from the destruction which was inevitable in his life being possessed by impure spirits. Likewise, the destruction in our lives, which is brought on because of our sin, Jesus rescues us from. He himself takes our place and endures the destruction which was meant for us. Jesus sets us free. But how does an encounter really change our lives? Like, how did it change the life of the man in our story? I mean, sure, he now wears clothes when he didn't before, but how does this encounter really change him? This encounter changes everything about him. It changes his thoughts and his actions and his behaviors and what he talks about with people. It changes everything. In our story, when the people of the town come to see what happened, they become scared and they start begging and pleading with Jesus to leave. They see his power and they just don't want him around. They want him gone. And so as Jesus and his disciples get in the boat to leave, the man who's been healed comes to Jesus and asks to go with him, to follow him. Jesus says no, which is kind of weird, right? Like, hasn't he just been spending a whole bunch of time walking around asking people to follow him, and now he's got to volunteer and he says no? Like, that's kind of weird. But instead, Jesus tells him in verse 19, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And so the man does. He goes back to his family and his friends and his neighbors, and he shares what Jesus has done for him. And you know what happens? These people who had been scared of Jesus, these people that had begged him to leave, they become amazed. They are amazed at what this man tells him, what Jesus has done for him. Jesus does more than just give this man his freedom. Jesus sets him free to send him out as his hands and his feet and his mouthpiece, to share what Jesus has done for him. Jesus' death on the cross, when he took our punishment, that's not the end of the story. No, Jesus is raised back to life. He totally destroys sin and death and is alive. Life, true, full, and flourishing life is in Jesus. And he wants us to share that life with those around us and give them the opportunity to also be set free. I don't know about you, but I find whenever something good happens to me, I just tell people. Like, you post it on Facebook or you do something. Some of you might know my brother, Andy. Well, he's getting married next week. It's going to be awesome. I'm really excited. But when he got engaged, I heard the proposal story, like, I can't even tell you how many times. It's a pretty good story. So my brother and his girlfriend at the time, they decided to fly to New York City for Christmas and New Year's. He decided beforehand that he was going to propose there, and he wanted to buy the ring from the Tiffany store in New York City. And so a couple of weeks, months beforehand, he's calling, he's emailing, he's contacting the store to make sure that they had the perfect ring in the right size so that he could pick it up when he got there. And so he organized the ring and then they flew there. And then he had to figure out a way to get away from his girlfriend for a couple of hours to actually pick it up. He manages to do that, doesn't tip her off what's going on, and goes and picks up this ring. On Christmas Eve, they go ice skating at Rockefeller Center. Rockefeller Center's just decked out with like all the Christmas decorations that you could even think of, and it's spectacular. My brother's got this ring burning a hole in his pocket. After a few like near misses with some rookie skaters, my brother gets down on one knee and pops the question. She says yes, of course, because they're getting married, and it's awesome. It's really wonderful. But do you know how I can tell that story with so much detail and like so well? It's because I've heard it a million times. Because what happened when my brother proposed to his girlfriend, it changed his life, and he just wanted to tell people, and so he told me lots and lots of times. And it's the same for this man in our story. He has an experience with Jesus which changes his life, and so he tells everyone about it. He tells his family and his friends. He tells the people he lives with, he works with, the people he just hangs out with. And this is what Jesus wants us to do. When we have an encounter with Jesus, when he sets us free, he does so that to send us out to tell our story. Jesus wants us to share with everyone around us that he has set us free, so they as well can have the opportunity to be set free. And this story gives us a pretty good idea of where Jesus might send us. It's kind of pretty obvious. He sends us where we already are. He sends us to our families, to our friends, our schools, our workplaces, our sporting groups. He sends us to the places we already live in and the people we already know. Jesus sends the man in our story back to the people he grew up with the people he knew since he was a little boy, who'd seen him grow, seen his demise, and seen him move out to the cemetery. These people would have noticed the change in him when he came back healed and set free. And so when we have an encounter with Jesus that changes our lives, it's the people who know us best that are going to be the ones to see the difference. I became a Christian at the youth group here at Gap. And I was like the first Christian in my family. So after I became a Christian, my thoughts, my actions, my behaviours slowly started to change. And I'd be at home with my non-Christian family and I was just a little bit different. After time, they started to notice. They started asking questions. They started making comments that my faith in Jesus had made a difference in my life. Over time, my sister started coming to church. She joined a Bible study group and she actually got baptized here. My mum joined a church and goes regularly, and she often encourages me in my faith. Jesus sends us to the places and the people where we already are. But sometimes we can feel a little bit inadequate or maybe underqualified to share our faith. I think sometimes we think we have to have everything figured out, every question that someone could ask us, we have to have the right answer to. But the guy in our story, he had none of that. He had barely any information about Jesus at all. He was a Gentile, so he wouldn't have known the Old Testament very well. He wouldn't have known that Jesus was the prophesied about coming Jewish Messiah. He wouldn't have known that. He hadn't been to Bible college for 3 years or even figured out his answers to the questions of predestination or the Trinity. He wouldn't have even known those words. All he had was an experience with the powerful and divine Jesus that changed his life. And that was more than enough for him to go and tell everyone he knew. And so when we have a powerful encounter with Jesus, when Jesus sets us free, we have all we need to go and share what he has done for us. Is going to Bible college or wrestling with our big questions bad? Of course not. But we don't need it to have it all figured out before we even go and tell people. The longer we spend in relationship with Jesus, the more we read the Bible, the more we wrestle with the big questions, it's going to help us, it's going to deepen our message and help us answer all those questions that people have. But we don't need it to start telling people. Jesus has set us free, and he sent us out to the people who know us best so that they will be amazed and have an opportunity for life and freedom in Jesus. Jesus sets us free and sends us out to be his hands and his feet, to bring about freedom and change in people's lives. As Jesus sends this man back into his network of friends and family, to the people who knew him best, Jesus also sends us to the people who will see the change, see the freedom, the healing that Jesus brings in our life, and notice the difference. And Jesus wants us to share so more and more people will have the opportunity to be set free, so that they can go out into their networks and sell what Jesus has done for them and be set free. And then they can go out into, you get the picture. I think that is so cool. I think if we did this, if we all actually went out into the places, to the people where we already are, and we told them about Jesus and what he'd done for us, our 2020 vision of seeing more people in more places making more responses to Jesus would be done. Because we'd be seeing more people in more places being set free and sent out. And that is pretty darn cool. So how about it? You guys with me? Cool. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you that you set us free from the things that have controlled us. We thank you that you have set us free in order to send us out. And we thank you that we are already in the places with the people that you want us to share with. Please give us boldness and courage to share how much you have done for us with one person this week, and that we may see more people in more places having life-changing encounters with you. Amen.